Welcome to the Modern Yogi Podcast. An exploration of ancient wisdom.
Hello, hello, everyone.
Welcome back to the Modern Yogi Podcast. We are on episode number
127.
127. We harmonize at the end. That was great. Oh, nice. We're like, yeah. I don't think choir. I know what harmonize means.
Yeah, I don't think you do.
All right, quick recap. We just started chapter 17 last episode.
We're on, what episode are we on?
Oh,
no, we did that.
We did that.
Oh my God.
We just sang it. I harmonized. It was a whole thing.
Oh my God. I said it too. Wow. Oh my God.
That's okay. Any quick recap on chapter 17?
No. Yes. Well,
the beginning of it.
Chaotic beginning.
We're nailing this so well. Yes. We continued the conversation basically from chapter 16 of like, you can be a demon or a deva. Oh my God. I was about to call Arjuna the wrong name.
It's okay.
It's okay.
Arjuna, basically, he's so cool because he knows he's on the side of the devas. He's like, okay, I'm good. I'm on the side of lightness and enlightenment. But what about all the different shades of gray? What about for the people who maybe follow something, but it's not approved by the scripture? So then Krishna basically goes on to answer that. And we had really cool discussions on faith connected to the three modes of nature and how faith isn't just something we believe in, but it's about also how we live. We are made of our faith. So, and however our faith is, that's who we will become in the future. So faith is a lot deeper than just yes or no believing in God. And then basically we started the text where Krishna is going to help us analyze faith in terms of what are daily aspects of our day-to-day lives that faith comes into play.
Yeah, it's super helpful because when you think about faith being, you know, not black and white, but like all kinds of shades, then you kind of start questioning, well, what is good? What is not? Yeah. What is, you know, we understand what bhakti yoga is, but sometimes we fall under a mode of goodness in terms of our faith and practices. And just to be able to understand that is really helpful. So I'm excited to get deeper into this and understand it even better.
Yeah, wonderful. All right. The invocation, please. Let us. Om Jnana Shalakaya Shakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Translation. I was born in the darkest ignorance and my spiritual master opened my eyes with a torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto them. All right. Chapter 17, text number 5-6. Priyadarshini.
Krishna speaking. Those who undergo severe austerities and penances not recommended in the scriptures, performing them out of pride and egoism, who are impelled by lust and attachment, who are foolish, and who torture the material elements of the body as well as the super soul dwelling within are known to be as demons.
Ooh. One more time.
Those who undergo severe austerities and penances not recommended in the scriptures, performing them out of pride and egoism, who are impelled by lust and attachment, who are foolish and who torture the material elements of the body as well as the super soul dwelling within are to be known as demons.
Interesting.
So is this kind of like when people torture their own bodies and be like, this I'm doing for the gods?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically this text is showing how the demonic mentality can be so subtle and sneaky that it can come out in activities such as austerities that don't seem demonic at all.
Mm-hmm. Like, I wonder... I'm going to put something out there.
Yeah.
Don't know. But you know those... Shama's already smiling. I mean, like, what is this fool about to say?
I love when you do this.
You know those tribes that have like their skin is...
pierced.
Like pierced or like they have like different... Not tattoos only, but like their skin is like different bumps because they've done it through some...
Health harm type.
Yeah, harm kind of thing, but it's part of like their cultural thing that could fall within.
It depends. Like if they're doing that to please some sort of God, then I think it's not kosher. But if they're doing it for like, it's like a cultural thing or like they think it's beautiful or some sort of beautification process, that's different, I think.
Wait, so you're saying doing it for a religious reason makes it not good, but doing it for funsies is okay?
I mean, it's not funsies for their body. They're hurting their body. But Krishna, I think, is saying like, you don't need to do all of this stuff in order to please me.
Right. Like, it's misguided if you think this will be some spiritual benefit harming your
body. If you think you're going to get cool God points for harming your body, that's not good.
Right. Mm. Plus, Prabhupada says, by these activities, not only is the combination of material elements of which the body is constructed disturbed, but also the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself living within the body. It's kind of like, hey, now.
Yeah, you're harming. I mean, I think when I think of that particular sentence, I think of like starving yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if you're starving yourself, your body is undergoing a lot of stress. And, exactly. and sometimes, again, it's like, where's the line? Because some people fast for 20 days and they're doing it for a health reason. That's not for, you know, pride and egoism, right? But if it's like, I think that's the main qualification here. Performing these activities out of pride and egoism, out of like, I am great and look at what I can do and let me show off. And this is, you know, that's when it becomes a matter of behaving like a demon, which also, I guess, would mean that you're in the mode of passion.
Interesting. Yeah. Passion. I think so, because you're doing it for an result. Prabhupada makes this sentence like, the scriptures recommend fasting for spiritual advancement, not for some political end or social purpose. So even, I don't know about this whole Gandhi fasting for, well, that was for political purpose, but also could be argued spiritual advancement. Yeah, I don't know. That one's a little spicy, ladies.
Interesting, yeah. For sure.
You know, I think it's interesting because we have to remember we're on a battlefield. So Krishna is saying all this to Arjuna for our benefit and also for the benefit of kind of like amping up Arjuna for what he's about to do. So I think here, by highlighting how the demonic nature is essentially a mentality, Krishna's also preparing Arjuna for the battle he's about to fight. Because on the opposite sides, you had leaders like Duryodhan and Dushasan, for example, that were like super obviously demonic. But then you also had many allies of the opposing side whose activities weren't that demonic, like Bhishma and Drona, for example, but somehow they still chose to support the demonic cause. So Krishna, in a way, through this, needed to remind Arjuna to not be so sentimentally connected to them, but also to neutralize them. To do his difficult duty as a Kshatriya, Arjuna needed to see the grim reality beyond, oh, they're my family, la, la, la.
But how does severe austerity and penance, are you trying to say that someone like Duryodhana was trying to do severe austerities and penances to have an upper hand and for ego?
No, I'm just saying that I think the very big brushstroke here, Krishna's pointing out how the demonic mentality is a mentality. It's subtle. It's not just like they overtly do a bunch of horrible things like Duryodhan and they're bad. So he's also kind of pointing out like, so even the others, the allies of the bad side, like Bhishma and Drona, they might not have been overtly such demonic personalities like Duryodhan, but is their inner mentality so pure? So kind of like he's trying to break the bonds of being sentimentally connected to the opposing side that Arjuna needs to actually go fight right now, you know?
Gotcha. So he's saying like, oh, so you're, you know, your grandfather and all these people who maybe are, you think they have good intentions, they're still choosing to do wrong.
Exactly. So very big brushstrokes. This text is saying the demonic nature is a mentality. It's not just an outward, so obvious, like I'm a demon if I
kill
people.
I'm a demon person.
No, like it's also a mentality.
It's both.
Yeah. It's interesting. Both. Exactly.
Okay.
Comes down to intention.
Comes down to intention. We spoke about that last episode.
But no, I don't think it fully does actually. Because when you're talking about like the grandfather's names are escaping me.
Bhishma and Drona.
Bhishma,
grandfather Bhishma.
And even Drona, let's say, like what? Drona's intention was, I have to support my son because he's my son. What kind of intention is that in understanding the reality of being a ruler and doing the right thing, the morally correct thing?
Right. I hear you. Yeah. Because if it was just about intention, then maybe they would be off the hook. But that's
They're not. They're literally all going to die. Exactly. Because even though their intention might be pure, like I'm supposed to protect my son, you're doing the wrong thing anyways.
Right. They still chose to be on the other side. So it's the mentality also. It's very subtle, the demonic nature.
That intention that he had in particular was motivated by attachment to his son.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Which I guess would be less bad than Duryodhan, sure.
But it doesn't change the outcome, which is like what I think intention is important, but the actions that we followed through because of those intentions are also very important.
Intention versus impact.
Yeah.
My partner says that to me all the
time. You cannot just have good intentions and then go around hurting everyone. That's problematic.
Right. So that's why Krishna's trying to point out It's also a mentality. So don't see these people as so like, oh, but they were my grandfather. They are my grandfather and my teacher. Mm. Like, no, you need to go fight with them now. You need to do your duty.
Oof.
This is heavy, actually. If we like were to picture a Game of Thrones type series on this, like we're in a very heavy scene. And sometimes we forget about that. This is intense.
It is. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Anything else for text 5 and 6?
Not really.
Alrighty. Okay. Text 7, Shama Sangeeta.
All right. Krishna says, even the food each person prefers is of 3 kinds, according to the 3 modes of material nature. The same is true of sacrifices, austerities, and charity. Now hear the distinctions between them.
Cool.
I think we mentioned this like previously in our podcast where everything is part of the 3 modes, even the things that we eat. And then I think Krishna's going to go deeper into that, but he's also introducing this new thing where it's like the 3 modes can also be for your own sacrifices, your own austerities, and your own charity. Right. And I think he's going to go deeper into that in this chapter.
Not only that, but what I liked, the keyword that stuck out to me in this one was prefers. So each person prefers by nature, you already gravitate towards a particular type of food based on the, you know, the balances of goodness, passion, and ignorance that you were given at birth.
Yeah. Right. And your dosha, right? Your Ayurvedic dosha is something that you can't control.
Like that's who you are. Like that's, you know, nature. Yeah.
Yeah, nature.
Yeah, yeah. That's nature. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really interesting because like I feel like I've definitely seen people who like sometimes gravitate towards sweets and like, you know, I can see that. And then I see other people who are like, you know, not so. It's so fascinating to correlate what people are interested in versus their natures.
And again, we're still under the text where Krishna's giving us like tangible things that go beyond ourselves to see about our faith and our mentality because, you know, a little reflection and we can see that our whole existence depends on factors beyond our control. So he's pointing out things like austerity, sacrifice, people or who we choose to worship in some of the previous texts and how we relate to the rest of the world, what mood do we have of gratitude, of awareness, it all reflects who we are. And that also reflects our faith. Mm-hmm. So that's why Krishna's trying to connect it all. Because these are all topics we've spoken about before, but he's putting it in a new context.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do feel like it's a different, slightly different perspective.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go for it, Shama.
No, I was like, he's going to explain it in this chapter. So
let's keep going.
Let's keep going.
Okay.
Yeah.
Text 8.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Shamali.
Foods dear to those in the mode of goodness increase the duration of life. Ah, exactly what you were just saying, Priya. Purify one's existence and give strength, health, happiness, and satisfaction. Such foods are juicy, fatty, wholesome, and pleasing to the heart. Right. Ooh, so we're born in with a certain nature that one might have a sweet tooth and they have to fight a little harder to maybe eat foods that are good for them or channel that, okay, find healthy sweets, you know, like...
But we should be striving for foods in the mode of goodness, like all of us, regardless of our desires, regardless of our dosha. Like we should be striving for things that are relevant to our body type and our Ayurvedic dosha, but also are good for us.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I was also thinking about, and I don't know too much about Ayurveda in this context, but I think if you, let's say, are someone... Like there's a sense of balance. Some people might have more, let's say, ignorance in their body. So eating foods that are more in the mode of passion.
Like ignorance in their body or ignorance in their consciousness?
Oh, no, well. like in their nature almost. Like some, maybe they're like slower to eat or not to, I'm not sure how to put this into proper examples, but like their body just is more like slow to process or this or that. If you eat foods that are passion, they might innate like move your body and like create more digestion. So maybe sometimes
balance it out by
there
doing
is
the
a
opposite.
Balance of things. I don't know. I'm just curious about that concept because I do feel like if you have slow digestion, then you do want to eat something that's a little bit more.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard of that. Yeah.
Right. Like
absolutely.
Yeah.
Hot or.
To stimulate, get things moving.
Yeah. So.
So I think you should do it according to your body type.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't, because if everyone's thinking like, oh, I can only eat foods in the mode of goodness, even though that's wonderful, they might need more.
Like first
for
balance
health.
Yourself out and then look to go to that point.
Yeah.
But there are foods in the mode of goodness that would be perfect for your body type.
Yeah.
So you just need to find out what that is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know enough to know, but I just don't want to qualify it in a way where people are like, I can only eat, you know, fruits and yogurt and this. That's the only thing I was thinking, but maybe I'm just not seeing the big picture. Oops. Mm-hmm.
You know, what's interesting. I love what a complete philosophy bhakti is, because many times in spiritual paths, or even maybe in bhakti in its initial phases, if someone's not matured in it, they might think, oh, we're not these bodies, just you can neglect your body. But no, it's all part of a bigger picture, because we've spoken about this before. If you're trying to go within deeply and chant, how can you focus if you're like starved or if you're depleted?
Yeah.
We need to connect to the divine, or we want to try to. So we need our consciousness to be steady, and we need to do all the things we can to assist these fragile vehicles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so if you're reading this along with us, and you're like, such foods that are juicy, fatty, wholesome, and pleasing to the heart, what does that even mean? We asked our trusty friend ChatGPT to give us some examples of what this could mean for you. So feel free to do a little hand up.
Okay.
I have a question. Should we do the ones Prabhupada said first and then the ChatGPT ones, or?
Wait, I don't even have a purport.
I don't have any purport.
No, but it's on 10. 10 encompasses all of them.
Oh.
What are you talking about, bro?
Okay, I got you. Do the ChatGPT one.
Okay.
But Prabhupada says.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
motor
goodness is milk products, sugar, rice, wheat, fruits, and vegetables.
Oh, yeah. It's all in there.
Is it the same as ChatGPT?
No. So ChatGPT broke it down by the actual, with the actual Sanskrit word, right? So juicy means rasya. So fresh fruits like mangoes, oranges, grapes, tender coconut water, and milk.
Nice.
Okay, right? Anything else for juicy? Anything you guys want to add from your own personal grocery list for juicy?
You're putting me on the spot, ma'am.
No.
Okay, what's fatty?
Okay, fatty. Snigda. Anyways, don't ask me this. I shouldn't be speaking Sanskrit. Okay. Fatty means ghee, clarified butter, whole milk, nuts, seeds, well-cooked grains with healthy oils.
Very nice.
Okay, wholesome. And this is fresh vegetables, whole grains like brown rice and quinoa, and legumes.
Very nice. Same as vegetables. Funny that they... Oh, maybe not.
Legumes.
Are legumes different?
What is a legume?
I thought they were vegetables.
Beans. Right? Legumes.
No. Legume?
I mean, I'm pretty sure they're beans unless I'm having like...
No, I think you're right. I think I just got it confused. Let me just double check.
What is a legume?
What is a legume?
You are hearing to the host of the podcast. Legume. Let's Google what's a legume.
As we're killing time talking about legumes.
Okay, it's the pea family.
Nice. Same.
So lentils, peas, beans.
Yeah.
Very
yeah,
nice. Cool. Okay.
Okay, cool. Right? All right. So add all these to your grocery list. And the last one is pleasing to the heart. This one is lightly spiced, lovingly prepared meals like khichdi, sweet rice, homemade breads, and foods offered to Krishna with devotion. Prashadam.
Wow.
Okay, ChatGPT. Is ChatGPT a devotee? I think so. Yeah.
I love it.
100%.
Very nice.
Lovingly offered to Lord Krishna.
Very, nice. Very nice.
Beautiful.
Okay.
Text 9. Priya.
Oh, is it me?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay. Foods that are too bitter, too sour, salty, hot, pungent, dry, and burning are dear to those in the mode of passion. Such foods cause distress, mystery, and disease. Bum, bum, bum.
Like, obviously, coffee is a very easy example of something, a beverage in the mode of passion. You can feel it.
Yeah.
Passion. It's not just some made up idea.
That's really interesting. Go for it.
You're actually right, Shyamala. Okay, too bitter. Katu. It means excessively bitter melon and strong black coffee are examples of that. Too sour. Pickles, vinegar heavy foods, sour yogurt, and fermented fruits like sauerkraut.
By the way, these are examples from ChatGPT. This is not like written
this
in
is
the
not,
Bhagavad
Gita. No, Prabhupada didn't say this. Krishna didn't say this. The...
ChatGPT.
The engineers at ChatGPT said this. But we're just trying to give you examples so that you know what to put on your grocery list. You know?
I like it. Keep going.
Okay. Too salty. Salt-heavy snacks, chips, and processed foods.
Very nice.
Very hot is the next one. So piping hot spicy foods or extremely hot foods. And it says temperature-wise.
Spicy versus temperature hot.
Yes. Nice. Mm-hmm. So both.
Either one.
Yeah. And then pungent. So things like chilies, garlic, onions, and hot spices like hot mustard or wasabi.
Huh.
Interesting.
I love these examples. They're interesting. Very interesting.
Yeah. Right? The next one is dry, over roasted or dehydrated foods like really dry crackers or overly toasted bread.
Do you think dry fruits would be passion?
No. I don't think dry fruit. I think overly dehydrated foods.
Okay.
Like burnt dry.
Yeah. Like where all of the moisture is removed. There's still moisture in
like
dry
astronaut
fruits.
Food.
Astronaut food?
Astronauts?
The wolves of the astronaut food, perdón.
I mean, in Spanish, it is astronauta.
I think that's it.
It must be the Spanish.
I honestly think astronaut food is not good food.
Yeah, probably, because it's dehydrated.
Super dehydrated.
But have you ever tried it, though?
I have not.
It's really good.
Have you tried it?
Yeah.
When have you ever been in this situation?
Okay, first of all, I'm from Texas, specifically from Houston. That's where...
Cape Canaveral.
I'm going to say it wrong, but NASA?
NASA? It's called NASA.
Shut up.
You're right.
No, say it correctly.
NASA.
Wait.
You're saying it weird.
You're saying NASA.
Okay, you say
it's
it.
NASA. Oh.
NASA.
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 Say it again, Shama.
NASA.
Are you serious?
I love it. No one can say it right.
This is a great moment for me.
NASA.
It's not NASA.
We're like, oh, he works at NASA.
That's Are you so joking funny. Me?
No, ma'am.
Roger works at NASA.
No, ma'am.
NASA.
NASA.
Oh my God.
NASA is worse, but I think NASA is also funny.
I'm not saying NASA.
Kind
of. NASA.
Anyways,
it
moving
is
on.
Not NASA.
So that's in Texas, in Houston. And so they sell astronaut ice cream.
And
at NASA, they sell astronaut ice cream.
Perdón.
And it's really yummy. But
that's great. Thank you for that example. All right. Well, we're all immigrants, actually.
Oh, Shamily.
I was born in the U.S.
Yeah, no, Shamily's the only person that's lived
here. I was
born
in the U.S. too. But it's pronounced NASA.
You were. Oh my God, I'm the only proper immigrant.
That's okay. No, we're expecting it from you. It's fine.
It was a great moment for me that everyone got it wrong. I mean, Shamily said it correctly, but whatever, okay, you know. Whatever.
I don't even know if Shamily's was correct, to be honest.
It was.
Anyways.
Thank you.
She can't accept it. Let's take this offline, ladies.
Yeah, we're going to take it offline. Right. Anyways.
Okay. And the last one is burning. So spicy fried snacks and heavily spiced curries or hot sauces.
Interesting.
So like all Cheeto products.
Yeah, no spicy anything.
Fried
Ladies
chips.
And gentlemen, do not be eating any spicy or hot flaming Cheetos anything, because that is definitely in the mode of passion.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, first of all, let people live. Second of all, eat it in moderation, because you know what it does to you.
I mean, it's so bad for you. But no, I agree. We're not going to judge people. You're right.
But also,
I was a little judgmental. Sorry. I was like, girl, do not be eating flaming hot Cheetos.
But if someone had said that to you 7 years ago, you would be like, what are you talking about?
I've had it once and I was like, this tastes like acid.
So that's just a personal preference. Yeah. I think I've realized that living in California has made me more health conscious. Mm. And when I talk to people who are not from California, they don't.
They're like,
think
we
the
drink.
Same.
We drink flaming hot Cheetos,
basically. And then I'm thinking like, oh, okay. Wait, I have to. Like, I personally, don't eat a lot of sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And so, my consciousness when I see someone eat a cake is, oh man, that's so sweet. I could never. Mm-hmm. I might have a tiny bite.
Yeah.
But that's normal for a lot of people, right? So then I have to be mindful to not perceive them from my perception and be judgmental, because that's not fair, because that's not how they perceive it. So that's all I was trying to say.
That's fair.
But in general, eat foods in mode of goodness.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, listeners, if I was judgmental.
It's okay.
If you want flaming hot Cheetos, go right ahead. But in moderation.
Yes. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Text 10 Shama Sangeeta.
All right. Krishna says, foods prepared more than 3 hours before being eaten.
Yikes.
Foods. That is tasteless, decomposed, and putrid, and foods consisting of remnants and untouchable things is dear to those in the mode of darkness.
Dear Lord.
Dear Lord,
now,
indeed.
Loophole, if you offer it to the Supreme Lord and Savior, our food becomes prasadam, and then it's all right if it's been more than 3 hours.
I think Prabhupada says it's all right. It's all right. Prabhupada literally says it's all right.
It's all right. Because, you know, with today's society, how it's structured, I can't be cooking fresh meals 3 times a day. I'm drowning here.
But remember, okay. So food's prepared before more than 3 hours before being eaten. So remember the time, place, and circumstance of when this is. No, girl. Let me get my point out. Okay. All right. So remember the time, place, and circumstance. Everyone, close your eyes.
Okay.
We are in the middle of Kurukshetra.
Okay.
In the middle of a battlefield, 5,000 years ago. Refrigeration is not a thing back then. Okay.
Excuse me. Are you trying to tell me that society was lesser advanced than we are?
I'm just saying that they didn't have refrigeration. And I think that prolongs the freshness of food.
So you're saying that this is a technicality and they don't really mean it.
I'm not saying that that's a technicality. Why would I say that Krishna does not mean what he's saying? That is borderline blasphemous.
I agree.
Are you accusing me of blasphemy?
Kind of.
Okay. I'm just saying that I think that number three can be give or take a couple hours due to refrigeration and technology.
First and foremost, I don't think we can add any numbers or words to this for our own benefit.
Nobody was doing
second
that.
Of all, okay. There were methods of keeping your food cool back then.
Oh, say more.
And warm.
Go ahead.
Like, did you know? She's laughing. You know, like, I'm going to speculate because I don't know. But, like, I imagine that if you dig a hole in the ground.
This sounds really well researched.
I know. Thank you. If you dig a hole under the ground and then you like put it under the shade and cover it, it stays cooler because of the temperature. It stays cooler than it would if it's out and about in the sun and whatever.
Sure.
So I feel like there were probably methods of keeping food. I mean, if it says more than 3 hours, they had to keep it fresh for 3 hours. How did they even do that? Right?
That's a good point.
If you leave dairy out for a few hours, it goes bad. So how did they do it? They had ways. It's not about you that.
While we talk, ChatGPT did in the Battle of Kurukshetra times, did they have a way to refrigerate food? And I will say, Prabhupada does add in the purport something that put my heart to rest, because when I read the 3 hours, I thought, no way do I have time in my day-to-day schedule to cook 3 meals and just dedicate my life to cooking. Anyway, and he says, remnants of food may be eaten only when they are part of a meal that was offered to the Supreme Lord or first eaten by saintly persons like a spiritual master. So that's kind of like a loophole that okay, that makes them not darkness. They're prasadam. So otherwise, if they're not offered, then the remnants of food just in a practical way are considered a bit in the mode of darkness, because in a practical level, they increase infection or disease when they sit around.
Yeah, they lose their nutrients. They harvest, you know, other things.
Yeah.
I have another loophole though.
Yeah.
What if it's fruits? What if you don't cook it?
Oh, yeah. Because then they're not prepared food. Food prepared more than 3 hours. Absolutely.
But what if you like make chia seed pudding?
Say more?
I mean, it's not cooked. Can you eat it after more than 3 hours?
See, I think there's many gray areas.
Yeah. You know? I mean, okay, so I did ask ChatGPT if there's a way to refrigerate foods during the time of the Mahabharata, okay?
Okay.
What did ChatGPT? So they said, yeah, they used earthen pots. So Priya was right. Okay. Stop dancing. So,
this is
very embarrassing. Very embarrassing for you.
You said I was making it up, but I'm smart. Okay.
This method is still used in many Indian villages today to keep water and curd from spoiling. Curd. Okay. And underground storage is another way, right?
Yeah.
Cool, shaded underground cellars and mud huts, and the use of cow products.
Okay. Nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the whole purpose of
TJ.
Right.
Children.
Sorry.
I'm not used to this role. Anyway.
Okay, continue.
The whole purpose of food really is to increase the duration of life, to purify the mind, and aid bodily strength. So when we think of it in that term, then of course it makes so much sense if like food is rotting, it's going to be bad for our bodies. Mm-hmm. It's going to lower our consciousness. If foods we talked about in the mode of passion, they're going to like reduce. Oh, Prabhupada said food in the mode of passion, which are, we said, bitter, too salty, too hot, overly mixed with like spice. It'll cause misery by reducing the mucus in the stomach, leading to disease. There's actual reasons for all of this. And foods in the mode of ignorance or darkness are essentially those that are not fresh, and you know, it'll cause other diseases and blah, blah, blah. So it all has this ripple effect in the body.
Okay. And so the ChatGPT definition of the tamasic foods.
Oh, cool.
Okay. So foods that have been sitting out too long, more than 3 hours, unrefrigerated.
Okay.
Reheated multiple times.
Heard that. But yeah. I think a big part of that is it loses its nutrients.
Right.
When
right.
it's more reheated. You cook something.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not just some ritualistic thing. It's
practical
and exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Reheated multiple times. That was interesting. Or cooked many hours before eating. And then the tasteless ones are things that are spoiled or bland or nutrient dead foods. Mm-hmm. Foods that have lost its natural taste and vitality. And the next one is decomposed or putrid. So rotting or moldy foods, mm-hmm. bad smelling foods, or anything past its expiration date, which my mom would argue, but she's not here for this right now. Okay. And then fermented or old. So old leftovers, fermented drinks like alcohol, unclean fermented foods, leftovers, food previously eaten or touched by others, unless one's own in a clean context.
Like somebody else's remnants?
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, leftovers. And then the last one is impure. Foods not prepared or offered in a clean or sacred way, like meat or alcohol or anything that involves violence or harm to others.
Love it.
Right.
Interesting.
I was just going to say the bland one is surprising to me because it does not seem like it fits everything else. It's like so mild. Oh, so if you don't put enough salt and pepper, like what are we talking about here?
No, I think it's because there are certain spices that are good for our body and that we should be having. Mm. So when you don't have those spices integrated, it's actually more harmful to the body.
Interesting.
Right. Like maybe I can picture people who are on extreme diets trying to lose weight and they have totally just like... no oils, no salts, nothing that's the good types of fat that you need.
I was thinking, yeah, that makes sense. But I was thinking like, what could you make that even like without salt or pepper or whatever, like would be so, because everything innately has a flavor.
I'm just picturing, let's say someone makes rice, steamed vegetables and tofu, but they don't put anything.
But I feel like vegetables have a flavor. They're not bland.
But you don't add like olive oil and salt?
No, I'm saying in the extreme situation that you just presented, it would
like,
still
would it be
have,
so bad?
Yeah. Is it still, yeah. It's an interesting little
I think it would
curiosity.
Be higher up than everything else. Like, okay, maybe in, add some stuff, the good fats.
Also, another thing I found interesting is I've never heard the Bhagavad Gita mention the idea of wanting to live a longer life. I think Prabhupada is saying it. I'm not sure. Let me see. Krishna says it too. Like increases eating foods in the mode of goodness, increase the duration of life.
Well, that is interesting because if we think what is the purpose of life, it's to purify our consciousness. That takes work. That takes time. It's hard to do it in such a short time. We want to live a long life to try to maximize this human life form and really squeeze the juice out of, okay, I need a little time to purify myself.
Yeah. That made me think about the example we talked about, like when a cow is killed, they are born as a cow again to finish their karma. Remember we were talking about something like that?
They have to continue.
They have to continue whatever karmic debt they had in that body. So like us, if we live a shorter life, we still have to continue the karmic debt that whatever we might have had. So then we're just going to be born again.
And we have to go through the whole
thing
again. Just to reach where we were.
So basically it's better to live a longer life.
Exactly.
And get it out of the way than to have to be born again and endure child.
Like being Hood. Born.
I don't know where I was going with that.
No, it's true. Slow that down real slow.
Most 5-year-olds aren't focused on connecting to the divine unless they're lucky to be born in a spiritual family that helps them. Yeah. So it makes sense. Yeah, but that's a good point. They haven't really spoken about wanting to increase the duration of life.
If anything, I was going to break down something. Never mind.
You're talking about underground storage and refrigeration again?
No, I was going to mention how I know that culturally it's sometimes seen in, correct me if I'm wrong, in Indian culture that like birthdays are not celebrated because you're just one day closer to death, or like that kind of concept of death is more prevalent than really rather thinking about living longer or whatever.
Right. Well, maybe we have to, it's kind of merge them, go hand in hand. So not deny the existence of death and be aware of it. But also we want to live long, healthy lives so we can do something of value in this life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's for sure. Alrighty. Nice. Text
11.
Me. Shamasankita.
Oh, Huda.
I honestly don't know. Ah. Oh, no, no. It is Shyamalan, I think.
Yes. Okay, Shyamalan.
I don't know.
Of sacrifices, the sacrifice performed according to the directions of scripture as a matter of duty by those who desire no reward is of the nature of goodness.
Mm, we talked about this multiple times, but can you repeat that again?
Yeah. Of sacrifices, the sacrifice performed according to the directions of scripture as a matter of duty by those who desire no reward is of the nature of goodness.
Mm.
So right here, it's kind of like the general tendency Prabhupada says is to offer sacrifice with kind of some purpose in mind. We want something, you know, we desire something, but it should not be done for those things. It really, if we're going to do a sacrifice, it should be what it's outlined in the text.
Yeah.
Prabhupada says, one should go to the temple or church as a matter of duty and offer respect to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and offer flowers and eatables without any purpose of obtaining material benefit.
Right.
Right. Because some people go to the temple or church like,
I want to look good.
For different reasons, right? Like, this would make me look good. It gives me a reputation or like whatever, right? Or I'm going to ask God to give me something. So that's the reason I'm going. But people don't just go for, you know, offering being and
duty, I think, is the starting point. Then it becomes a sense of love and emotion. And if you think of any relationship, at the very least, nurture your relationship because you made a commitment. And from there, the love and the emotion will continue growing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One should simply go to offer respect to the deity. Yeah. I think respect is like the most important thing in any relationship. Yeah.
Totally.
Okay.
Okay.
Text 12. Priya.
Mm. But the sacrifices performed for some material benefit or for the sake of pride, O chief of the Bharatas, you should know to be in the mode of passion. Okay. So like we were saying, those people that show up for, this gives me reputation or this or that is more in the mode of passion.
Right.
Yeah, praise.
All right. Well, text 13, Shama.
That was a short purport. I like it. That's good. Thank you, Prabhupada. Okay. Text 13. Krishna says, any sacrifice performed without regard for the directions of scripture, without distribution of prasadam, spiritual food, without chanting of Vedic hymns and
remunerations
to the priests and without faith is considered to be in the mode of ignorance.
Wow. I love that.
Mm.
That's really nice because it basically tells you if you are going to do some sacrifice, these are the things that you should do. If you look at it at the inverse.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So tell us the inverse.
The inverse. Follow what scripture say in terms of following, you know, the ritual, the sacrifice. Right. Give out prasadam, spiritual food. Chant Hare Krishna.
Yep.
And pay the priests.
Yes.
And have faith.
Mm. Yeah, that's good.
Like you cannot do it all without considering that this is a faithful practice, right? Like it's not just like we're just doing it.
It's not a ritualistic. It has to be done with the intention of faith.
That's also a part of it. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Prabhupada says faith in the mode of darkness or ignorance is actually faithlessness. That's not true faith.
Okay. Mm. So if you're going to do something good, like a sacrifice, that's good. Follow the scriptures, distribute prasadam, chant, give money to your priest and have faith.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's
a good checklist.
Very, very simple, easy to remember.
Mm.
Okay. Text 14.
Shyamalan.
Yeah.
Austerity of the body consists in the worship of the Supreme Lord, the Brahmanas, the spiritual master, and superiors like the father and mother, and in cleanliness, simplicity, celibacy, and nonviolence.
Ooh, one more time.
Austerity of the body consists in worship of the Supreme Lord, the Brahmanas. Who again are the Brahmanas if someone's just tuning in?
The good guys.
The good guys.
Like the priests at the temple, the people that are worshiping the deities in the altar.
Yeah. The spiritual master and superiors like the father and mother. And in cleanliness, simplicity, celibacy, and nonviolence.
So giving respect to everybody that's come before us.
Mm-hmm.
That's an austerity at times.
Ugh.
I think that's what he's saying. I feel like this is an interesting one because a lot of times people think of austerities as, or sacrifices as things you do outwardly, kind of like the previous text where you're like, okay, I'm going to have like, I don't know, I'm going to give an example, like a wedding, right? That is a sacrifice. It's, you are making commitments, you're feeding everyone, you have faith that Krishna is protecting the situation. Maybe that's considered, I'm not sure. I think it's considered a sacrifice, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, something that is outwardly, but the reality is that it first starts with austerity in our bodies. So right. we are consistent in worshiping Krishna. We, and we, you know, treat the brahmanas and the spiritual master well, and we treat our fathers and mother well, and we keep our bodies clean, simple, celibate, and nonviolent, right?
Yeah. Prabhupada gives an interesting definition of celibacy. He said something like this before, but this way kind of sounds very broad, because he said he should not indulge in sex outside of married life, for sex is sanctioned in the scripture only in marriage, not otherwise. This is called celibacy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He said it differently in other places, but I've heard this definition as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that means that if you are someone who's not going to get married, then you are celibate in a different definition, which right. is just not.
Yeah.
Right?
That's so, fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Text 15, Priya.
Oh.
Wow. We're just breezing through them.
Rolling.
Okay. Austerity of speech consists in speaking words that are truthful, pleasing, beneficial, and not agitating to others, and also in regularly reciting Vedic literature.
Oh, I love that.
I love this one.
This is a big verse, actually.
This is a really good one. Yeah. I mean, it's beautiful to think that Krishna was part of being elevated in consciousness is we shouldn't speak in a way that disturbs or, what he says, agitates the minds of others. That's huge.
Okay. Austerity of speech consists of speaking words that are truthful. That's a big one.
Mm.
Pleasing. So how would you define pleasing speech?
Considerate. Yeah.
And that's where, sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
That's where it becomes a little task of you. It's not about, I can't communicate negative emotions. It's about finding the way to do so because, and I think I've said this before, Keshav Swami says that our ability to go within is so dependent on our ability to navigate our external relationships.
Yeah.
So finding a way to just not agitate someone's mind, not being aggressive with how we say things, being in the mode of goodness with whatever we want to communicate.
Yeah, I love that Kristen. I think I said this before, the Kristen Bell quote where it's honesty without tactfulness is cruelty.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So finding a way to be honest, but in a way that is pleasing, that is compassionate, that is empathetic to the recipient.
Yeah. There's a whole, I feel like we've mentioned all of this before because it's come up before, but there's a term in psychology, which is nonviolent communication. And it's all about how can I communicate what I'm feeling, thinking, experiencing without attacking or making somebody else feel, you know,
right,
bad, I guess, to the best of your ability. And so it's a lot of like, I feel this, not really blaming others. And I think that falls under the category of pleasing. But it also reminds me of that chart that children have where it's like, is what you're speaking helpful to someone, truthful, like, you know, right? Like, is there really a need to say something that isn't beneficial?
Yeah.
Like if you walk around just being like saying all kinds of things, what's, you know.
But there's so many people, myself included. It's hard, right? Yeah. And I think that this should also be considered when you're talking to regular people. You should talk to me as you're also talking to devotees, but also when you're talking to yourself and also when you're by yourself,
that's
right?
That's a big one.
I love that.
Yeah. Because like that, you have to be pleasing to yourself also. And another environment is like, say someone is driving really slow in front of you. And I've been be like, why are you driving so slow? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so like, even when there's nobody around you.
Yeah.
And like even being pleasing in that. And I used to have like this, like not road rage, but like you just, I would get mad. Right. But then I've learned to just breathe through that and not say anything, instead of just breathe through it, because those types of little agitations happen all the time. Yeah. And so being pleasing in speech is also when you're by yourself as well.
Right. That's a really good one. Treating yourself as a friend.
I love this verse.
Yeah.
It's really nice. Good standard for people.
Yeah.
I also struggle with it in the sense that I think most people have a lot of internal thoughts that they never say out loud. And I'm not one of those people.
No. What?
I think I don't know when to shut up sometimes. if I feel comfortable a situation. Like I wouldn't do it in a group of people, but if I'm one-on-one with someone I trust, I'll just say all of the things in my brain, you know? And I feel like sometimes maybe it isn't beneficial or it isn't necessary, you know? And okay. I'm trying to figure that out more.
Okay. Well, that's very reflective. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I think like everything, Priya, it's a double-edged sword because that also has a good side. The good side is like openness and transparency can take the relationship deeper. And then like all qualities, then the other side is like, okay, how might the other person hear this? Is that really what I mean? Or might they hear it more negatively than maybe that's not even what I mean? So use different words to word it in a way that it reaches their hearts. But I think it's a good baseline.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's good, there's bad. There's something to figure
good,
out.
Good, bad, who's to say?
Good, bad, who's to say? Yeah. Good conclusion.
Yeah. But I think like this is a really important verse. Yeah. In the way that we communicate, right? Whether it's to ourselves or to our devotee friends. Like, yeah. It's also like, you know, this notion of Vaishnava aparat, right? Where right. It's like, we have to be very, very conscious of how we speak to other devotees totally. As mm-hmm. well.
It's right? not like, shut up, get out of my way as I can go to the Lord. No, yeah. right. It's like, yeah. you have to be very respectful. We're totally. Servants of the servants of the servants.
Yes.
And with that, I think that might be
yeah.
the end.
Yeah. All right. So please join us next time. For chapter 17, text number 16.
Yeah. See you next time.
Bye. Bye. Hello, beautiful souls. If you like what you're hearing, please follow us on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast.
And if you love what you're hearing, please make sure to share a link to our podcast at Modern Yogi Podcast with all your friends, families, and long-lost cousins.
And if you have any questions at all, send us a DM on Instagram at Modern Yogi Podcast, and we'll be sure to get back to you.
Thank you for listening to
The Modern Yogi.